This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me. And walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Hey, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio, a day late, but better late than never, as they say. Kirk and JB, I know that you guys were there. I have called in on the Direct Connect line and I could hear you, so it worked, except for the fact you could not hear me. So I was only half successful on the call-in. And then as I attempted to call in on the host line, it would not accept my call. So if we do have a problem, JB, you may have to call in on the host line so that they know that we're that it says you are not connected.
That's right there.
Please call.
All right. So I'll try and get on that.
So you may have to do that, JB, and call back in on the host line.
Okay.
I'm reading in the chat room that we are live and that while we are a day late, which I apologize for, I have a wonderful excuse. I can provide a tardy letter from a very reliable source. But I had actually thought yesterday was Thursday. Today was Friday. I was looking forward to doing the show tonight, and I saw the two emails that JB said they couldn't get the show up and running, which means we would have failed yesterday. But nonetheless, I was really looking forward to doing the show today, and come to find out it was supposed to be yesterday. My excuse is that at the time of the show, I was absolutely engrossed, mesmerized by the most amazing Ms. Moore that we have yet considered. And I did have a chance, and I know that you guys may not have had a chance to read it. I think, Kirk, I heard that you had a chance to at least skim it.
Sure, and I read it.
And it's not, I mean, we're a long way from being done. I haven't finished all of the commentary and insights on it, and I'm not quite through with the 89th Ms. Moore. It's long. It's 53 statements. And I'm concluding it with a mini version of Questioning Paul. Where Paul actually mentions Doe twice, once in a speech in Acts and once in Romans. And I'm absolutely having a field day with what Paul said. He is such a scumbag. And the way that he twists Yahweh's word, takes them out of context, misstates them, draws the opposite conclusion to what God actually said. I'm in the midst of it. And I have to tell you, there are sections of it that I read the other day. And as I read them out loud, I mean, tears were coming from my eyes. I mean, I'd say this is amazingly moving, convicting, affirming, landscape-changing, revolutionary insights. I have rewritten the beginning of this chapter, and I want to share what I've written. And I don't think this is overhyping it.
Okay.
First of all, I've changed the name. We're no longer in Volume 3 of Observations for Our Time. We're now in Volume 1 of Coming Home. in Our Time. So this is now volume one of Coming Home in Our Time. It is a referendum between David and Jesus, both in quotes. This chapter is entitled To Dode or Not to Dode. It is now the fourth chapter in Coming Home in Our Time. The byline for the chapter is called The Root of Replacement Theology. I thought I understood that replacement theology was replacing Gentiles, or replacing Israel with Gentiles and all the promises that Yahweh made to Israel. But that's not the core of it. The core of it, and I'm going to tell you, God is pissed off. He is angry as angry allows. The core of replacement theology appears in Paul's speech and letter, where everything that God promised to Dode and gave to Dode has been usurped and placed on the Dionysian version of the Christian Jesus. And it's overt by Christians. And God does not think it is the least bit humorous. So, the opening line of this chapter reads, "The psalm we're about to consider is the most relevant revelation of our time, especially as Yahweh is calling Yisrael and Yehuda home. It presents Dode as the chosen one. It presents Dode as the Son of God. It presents Dode as the Mashiach, Messiah, as the King of Kings, as the embodiment of the covenant. It says of Dode that he will be as brilliant and as enduring as the sun in God's presence." By contrast, the Mizmor condemns Shaul Paul, the principal author of the Christian New Testament, calling him the most deceitful and damning man of all time. It actually provides the title to Shaul, the son of evil. This is a referendum between the covenant and Christianity. So, Kirk, you've had a chance just to peruse it with Terry.
Yes.
Is that overhyping it?
Not at all.
It just grabs you. It doesn't give you a chance to breathe, does it?
No, you know, after I read it, I was just telling JB that I read 1842, Psalm 1842, where it says, you know, that Dode is saying that they pleaded for help and there was no Savior and Yahweh did not answer them, so I polarized them. That always made me twinge a little, but after you read this, you at some point you have to come to that's the most appropriate thing to do. It needs to go away completely. No twinging now.
God is really angry, and I think it's a crime against God that could be second only to replacing His name with Satan's title.
Yeah,
the replacing all these promises that He made to Dode and giving them to the caricature called Jesus Christ. God is annoyed, angry, that people believe the founder of the world's most popular religion, when he deliberately and unabashedly transferred every promise God himself made to his beloved son to the misnomer Jesus Christ. So at the end of this chapter, after celebrating every nuance of the 89th Mizmor, we're going to expose and condemn Paul's pathetic attempt at replacement theology, his twisting of the Word of God to deify his variation of Dionysus, while demeaning Dode, such that the most interesting man in the world is reduced to a bumbling sperm donor. To be rational and aware of what Paul had to say and write regarding Dode, especially after we consider this Mizmor, will cause the same individual to love one and hate the other. The 89th Psalm begins by revealing that it will be presenting insights which we'd be wise to contemplate because they apply to the everlasting and native-born strong arm of God. When the psalmist focuses on a concept that Christians, Jews, and Muslims are one to ignore, we need to pay attention. Because Yahweh, he says, is loving and merciful because he is trustworthy and dependable. And that means the very idea of a New Testament, a Talmud, or a Quran. By presenting a different approach, they negate the fundamental truth required for Yahweh to be loving. A capricious God is not merciful. God's promises are reliable because he never changes his approach. What he has promised remains true for all generations and for all time. To annul it and replace it with another plan, whether that be faith, obedience, or submission, nullifies the means Yahweh has chosen to be merciful. God gets so much in our face in this Mizmor Psalm that after he makes all these wonderful statements about Dove, and he says, if these are not true, then I'm a liar. If I didn't make all these promises to Dod, call me a liar. That's pretty much in our face, isn't it?
Pretty straightforward.
He's saying that the authors of Christianity are essentially calling God a liar. Paul is calling God a liar. And God's not amused. All right, this begins. A poem of insights to contemplate and comprehend. It's meskil is the word. It's the lyrics to a song written to convey important ideas worthy of thoughtful consideration. Meskil is a compound of ma, to ponder important questions regarding zakah. Being circumspect, being prudent, gaining insight, pondering them, pay attention to understand, and learning to comprehend. So it's a poem of insight to contemplate and comprehend to, for, by, or of Ethan Ezra. Now, Ethan, which is has the E and then a yod and then a T-H-A-N, so Ethan, it means that which is continuous and everlasting. So this is a poem of insights to comprehend about that which is continuous and everlasting. Let me tell you something that's continuous and everlasting because God makes this really clear. His testimony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just that in the Hebrew language, verbs are not stuck in time. It's the verbs in Hebrew convey truths that were true, are true, and will always be true. It's not that God just equates himself to life, which is everlasting. He says explicitly that his words are true and reliable and dependable because they never change. Ethian is of Ezra. It means the native-born person and strong arm. Well, the native-born person who is the strong arm of God, according to God, is Dod. Now, since there was a man who bore this name, a man explicitly noted for his wisdom in Malachim, 1 Kings 4:31, who was a contemporary of Solomon. In fact, according to this, prior to Solomon, he was the wisest man in the world. Because he was a contemporary of Solomon and was in Solomon's court, he would have known Dod. He would have served as an eyewitness to Dod's relationship with Yahweh. It's likely that Ethan, Ha, is Rocky, was inspired by God to compose this music. And yet today, I think it's what his name conveys that's become even more germane to his song than who he was. What he reveals should be on every level and echo throughout time. If you are a Jew, if you are a Israelite, an Israeli, you need to understand every nuance of this song. You know, there's an old line that when Jews are talking with Christians, and they'll say, listen, it's no big deal. When we meet the Messiah, we'll just ask him, have you been here before? I don't need to ask that question. He's not only been here before, he's the most famous Jew of all time.
Second only maybe to Moses.
Even more out of this place.
I don't know if
Moses...
As far as well-known, it's possible that Moses is as well-known as though David.
I've never talked with a Christian that doesn't bring up Psalms.
Put it in perspective here. Do you know how many times Dode's name appears in prophecies? And there's more prophecies?
Over 1,000. Probably a couple.
Right at 1,000. Right. Moshe's is second. Moshe's name appears about 700 times. Do you know how many times Yosha's name appears?
Zero.
100 maybe?
No, zero. Zero. Yosha's name as it relates to Yosha ben Yahweh.
Okay.
There isn't a single prophecy regarding that names the Christian Jesus. Not one. And there are 1,000 pertaining to Dove. The only person in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and the entire Hebrew witness that is named more often than Dode has to be this guy named Yahweh. He's it. Yep.
That's good.
It is Yahweh, Dode, and Moshe. And after Yahweh, Dode, and Moshe, you know, it goes to double digits. The Mizmor Psalm begins. And the voice of this song now is going to change. It begins by the psalmist speaking of God and to God. It reads, I have chosen to sing. I want to lift up my voice in song, genuinely ascribing my choice of lyrics to melodious sounds. About the loyal love, steadfast devotion, enduring favoritism, unfailing affection and genuine mercy, chesed, of Yahweh, doing so on behalf of all generations throughout time. Dor wa dor. You know what? When Paul gets really pushed, he says, "Oh my God, the people are pushing." He says, "So you're telling me that the Torah is an absolutely worthless document. It had no purpose whatsoever." He said, "Oh, no. The Torah had purpose until Christ. And then once Christ came, he replaced the Torah." Well, according to the Psalm, Yahweh's mercy, and he only has one way of delivering his mercy, which is through the Torah, endures on behalf of all generations throughout all time. Oh, but even preceded by Olam, doing so forever, for all eternity, on behalf of all generations throughout all places and all time. Dor wa dor. So it begins by proving that two things that are germane to the Christian religion are untrue. the Christian religion has the God of the Old Testament of the Torah being wrathful and vindictive and incapable of being merciful, which is why they created their gospel of grace. This says, he's merciful. Unfailing affection, loyal love, steadfast devotion, forever. On behalf of just Jews, on behalf of just the people at that time, until this caricature of Dionysus appears, Jesus Christ, until Paul contradicts him. But this says, doing so forever on behalf of all generations throughout all places and time. Game over for the Christian religion.
Yeah.
Its central premise has been torn asunder. And oh, by the way, the person providing the mercy, they know Jesus Christ. Joe. With my mouth, I will make known, yada, your emuna. Emuna is a word that is going to be played over and over again. This psalm is about chesed and emuna. Chesed is genuine mercy, loyal love. Emuna, trustworthiness, honesty, dependability, a steadfast commitment to the truth. It's from Emun, enduring truth, and Aman, that which is supportive, easily confirmed, that which is upheld, trustworthy and reliable, verifiable and confirming, that which is correct and accurate. Yes, indeed, I say, the eternal and everlasting love, devotion, affection, favoritism, and mercy will be built up and developed to conceive children and construct a home. Yes, indeed. Key. I say, Amar, the eternal and everlasting Olam, Chesed, love, devotion, genuine mercy, will Bana. Bana is the feminine of son. It's not daughter. Beth's daughter. It's to build a home based upon the family name, but it is a feminine concept. And because it's based upon the feminization of building and creating a home for children, it means that his mercy will build up and develop such that children are conceived in the home that his everlasting love creates. Fun is a marvelous term, and it's so easy to translate because it is so obviously from Beth Nun, which is son, child. And Beth Nun is so easy in the Paleo-Hebrew because it's a picture of a home followed by a sperm. And then it has the hey at the end of it, which makes it feminine, which is reaching up and looking up to God. So it's a home where that child grows up. And it's, he concludes this opening thought by saying, you will authenticate, establish, and sustain your trustworthiness. This is Emuna again within the spiritual realms. That is Mizmor, lyrics to be sung, Psalm 89, statements 1 and 2. Those who know Yahweh realize he is loving and merciful. Absolutely and invariably devoted to his family. His affection is everlasting, spanning the eons of time. It does not say that God is cold, Chesed. all loving. If he was, they would be, the whole message would be muted and meaningless. It does not say that. It says that he is merciful, not all merciful. And he can't be all merciful because, as we're going to learn, one of the things that he is really upset about is that the barriers that he has put around his covenant home, these have been torn down by usurping the promises he made to Dodd and giving them to the Christian Jesus. And he's really upset about that. So that all you have to do is believe and, you know, you're saved by God. No, no, no. There were barriers and walls around the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
Just as there are barriers and walls around God's covenant family.
Someone earlier this week actually asked me, it was in the forum, and they're like, they were talking about, and it's a verse from John, and I'd say, if God is love, agape, is there? He asked me if there was anything in the Torah to support this. I just looked up the word agape and what it meant. Agape, literally, in the Greek terminology, really meant,
family love.
It meant unconditional love. Was the way the Greeks defined agape. Yahweh is not agape. Yahweh has terms and conditions for his family. Yahweh does not love unconditionally. He has conditions.
Correct.
Well, that's a concrete definition to, and Yahweh always uses the concrete language where you have to define what it is in real terms. Like, this is a deal. If I love you, this is what I will do for you. This is what you will do for me. That's the whole idea of the covenant. It's emotive word. It doesn't really mean anything in a concrete language.
It says that God is loving.
Yes.
But it doesn't say
does
God is love.
Right.
And he's not. If God is love unconditionally.
God is love. There is so much more to him than simply that concept.
Emotion.
Right.
Yeah. If all there was love, would you want to spend eternity with that? That would get boring quick.
Oh, be no purpose of anything that he wrote. If he's all loving, there's no purpose to what he wrote. Yeah, it was also trustworthy. It's such a simple concept, but such extraordinary implications. Rather than being omnipresent or omniscient, and thus irrelevant, he is honest and thus reliable. Nothing is more important to mankind than God's steadfast commitment to the truth, along with the tools he's provided for us to independently verify that his words were inspired by a being unconstrained by space and time. If this were not true, it would not matter what else he had to say. Think about that for a moment. If God were not trustworthy, if God was capricious, and if the Christian New Testament, the Talmud, and the Quran were actually inspired by God, then it would make absolutely no difference what he had to say prior to them or in them, because he would not be trustworthy.
The whole dispensationalism idea right there. If he's trustworthy and he says there's only one way, there can't be five dispensations.
If he says that the covenant is his family and there's only one of them, and the Christian New Testament is based upon a new covenant, then either God is untrustworthy or the new covenant is rubbish. That's just very simple and profound logic.
Well, and if God's untrustworthy, then the New Testament is rubbish anyways.
That's correct.
It's a lose-lose situation.
Oh, there is no prevailing for the Christian New Testament.
Yeah.
And it is impossible rationally for it to exist. If God said that David is my Messiah, and the Christian New Testament never mentions him as such, but gives that title to Jesus, it's wrong. if the Christian New Testament has Jesus as the King of Kings, then Yahweh says Dode is the King of Kings, then the Christian New Testament is wrong. If the Christian New Testament says that Dode is the Son of God, and the Christian New Testament says that Jesus is the Son of God, we got a problem. Particularly when Yahusha said, I'm the Son of Man. You know, when Yahweh says of Dode that he is my chosen one, then I'm sorry, Christians. But you ought not be calling yourself Christians, because Dode is the chosen one, not Yahusha. And it makes perfect sense. God created the heavens and the earth and life itself and authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms for the express purpose of creating and enjoying a family. Dode is his Bakutim, his firstborn child, his most beloved, his chosen one. It is, Dode is the celebration of the very reason the universe exists. Yahusha is mini-me. Yahusha is the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. Why would Yahweh celebrate a diminished manifestation of himself when the purpose of the universe was to enjoy a family? And the most important member of that family is Dode. It's so obvious, it's so simple, it's so profound, it's so genuine. It's just amazing that 2.5 billion people have been hoodwinked by the obvious lie.
It's so pervasive in society. I mean, look how long it took for us to get past it and get to the truth.
Oh, yeah, it did. But I'll tell you what, this psalm, in fact, the first seven psalms, and then this one. I mean, it's just over. It's this myth that Christians were waiting for the second coming. No, it's just not coming back. Dode is the one that's coming back. You know, they're expecting their Jesus to be brilliant as the sun. Well, God says, no, it's Dode in my presence right before me. It's going to be as brilliant as the sun.
Well, you're back to the premise. He's either telling the truth or he's lying. Christian church, is he lying? Or ridiculous?
So it is this simple for Christianity. If Yahweh, as he claims, is trustworthy and reliable throughout his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and he proves that he is through prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is accurate assessments of the past, the present, and future. And consistent, he never contradicting himself. If, in fact, Yahweh is trustworthy, as he claims to be, and he proves himself to be, then there can be no Quran, no New Testament, and no Talmud. Because all of those contradict and alter and annul what is written in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. So if God's trustworthy, those three religious books are all untrustworthy, and they did not come from God. They were not inspired by God. And if the God who inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is a liar, if he is not trustworthy, then those
are
wrong. The Quran and the Christian New Testament, all of which claim that their authorization came from the God of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, that all of them are false. There is no way for them to be true. They're either a lie because they contradicted the truth, or they're a lie because they said that their authorization comes from the lie, if it were not true. It is that simple. There's not a Christian theologian in the universe that can contradict what we just said.
That's totally true.
What follows now is in Yahweh's voice. God begins by equating Dode, the beloved, with the Breath Covenant. And unequivocally states that Dode is La Bashir, the chosen one. It affirms that Yahweh Shabba swore an oath to Dode because he is God's Ebed co-worker. And that's important because Yahweh never reneges on a promise, a realization that he will make irrefutable as we move through this song. Even more than this, Yahweh said that he has made Dode an ad olam, an eternal witness, such that Zerah, his seed, and whatever he sows will bana, be developed into a family and home on behalf of Dor, every generation and time. Well, that's a lot to process, but let's read it. Yahweh states, I have established Karat, cut. As in the case, by the way, of the study you did, cut is the basis of circumcision. Mm-hmm. I have cut, as is in the case of circumcision, making a resolution through separation, a solemn agreement between parties with stipulations, responsibilities, and benefits. A bereth, a covenant, a family-oriented relationship agreement, which brings individuals together with action, commitment, and engagement in accordance with the stipulation required of all parties to the agreement. I have established a bereth covenant with La Bashir, Ani, with my chosen one. I have sworn an oath to Dode, my co-worker and servant. And before we read the rest of it, just let that sink in. I have established the covenant with my chosen one. I have sworn an oath to Dode, the one who works with me. He has equated the covenant with Dode. Mm-hmm. He is called Dode, the chosen one. Sorry, Donald Trump. No, not you.
You know, I'm looking at 13 English translations, and they all agree with that. How do they do that?
Yeah, how can you do that and have that in a book that Christians are running around, that Muslims claim were inspired, that the Talmud claims to argue on behalf of, when it says a statement that's just that clear? I have established the covenant with my chosen one. I have sworn an oath. I have made a binding promise, and I will always affirm the truth of this statement to Dode.
To Dode, my servant. Yeah, that's exactly what it says.
You know, and Ebed, which is always translated servant, I just want to make a point here. Do you know what the difference is in the way that Ebed is written and the way that Abad is written? Abad is the Hebrew word to work. You know the difference in the original Hebrew text between Ebed
and Ebed? Ebed
with
a... Ebed. Nothing.
Both
of them are Ebed. Like Edon and Edon. That's what I think.
They are written identically. The only difference is the diacritical marking of the Masoretes. In the 11th century CE. Same word.
Mm-hmm.
And abad means to work. Abad ani would be my work. To go. The one who works on my behalf. That's what Dode did. He worked on behalf of God. Well, I have established the Bereth Covenant with my chosen one. I have sworn an oath to Dode, my co-worker, my associate and servant. So if you were wondering Dode's relationship to the covenant, and when I read the first time, he is my son, I am his father, I said, that's it.
Yeah.
Dode is the essence. He's a living embodiment of the covenant. That's what this says. I have established, I have cut the covenant. I have made a resolution through separation to create the covenant with my chosen one. And I'm sorry, Christians, you can't make the chosen one Yosha. First of all, Yahweh didn't choose Yosha. Yosha is many, many. And the man's name is written right here. So I'm here to tell you that is as close as Yahweh is to what is called Yosha, where Yosha is simply a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. And his favorite person in the world was Dode. He knows the difference between those two names. If he meant to say my chosen one was Yosha, he is fully capable of saying it, and he didn't. What do you think? God is a nincompoop? All you Christians, that every time Dode is mentioned, you want to usurp the prophecy and say, well, that means that it's speaking of Christ. You don't think that God's smart enough to know the difference between Dode and Yosha? I'm sorry, my God's not stupid. Yours may be.
My God has all those stupid names.
Your God may. After all, you call him all sorts of stupid names. And is there any evidence that Dode was the chosen one, besides the fact that God just said, he is my chosen one? Yeah, he told Shamuel. In the midst of all of the debacle of King Shaul. Listen, I've already picked out my guy, the one that I want anointed as my Messiah. I picked out the one that I want to be the King of Israel. I have made my choice. I want you to go over here, and I want you to continue to meet with young men until I tell you that's my chosen one, and then anoint him as my Messiah. And guess where old Dode came from?
Right down the sheep pasture. In the flock.
Yeah, he was tending sheep. Where?
He was the last one they looked at, too.
He was tending sheep in Bethlehem. Oh, that's where he came from.
Bethlehem, of course, yes.
And he came from Bethlehem. And guess what he was riding when he came to meet them? A donkey.
A donkey.
All the prophecies that Christians have usurped to apply to their Jesus apply to those. All of them. I have established a Berech covenant with my chosen one. I have sworn an oath to Dode, my co-worker and associate. You know, for God to say, I have made a binding promise to a man. You know, it's one thing for me to say, God, I'm going to swear an oath to you. I'm going to be as diligent as I'm capable of being. I'm going to try to be as accurate and as complete and translating your words. I'm going to share what I learn as enthusiastically, as bluntly, as boldly, as passionately as is possible. For me to say I'm swearing this oath to Yahweh, that's reasonable. I actually haven't said those things because I think that my actions speak louder than my words in that regard. But, you know, it's God's God. It is certainly reasonable for us to make a promise to God. Mm-hmm. I just got a chat room thing. Apparently, people can only listen if they call in. Hopefully, it's not, it is recorded. And it says on this, I will check tomorrow. But we may do this show again if it is not. Did you call in, by the way, JB, on the host line?
I am, yes.
Okay, so you're in on the host line.
The studio finally popped up for me, so I'm hoping everything's recording just fine. But, yeah, everyone's saying that if they, like, just go to the webpage, it's not say anything. If they call in, they can hear us, though.
Okay. And I know that the guest line that we were previously used is at the top of the page, the 347-326-9553 is not working, but they will give you a guest line there, and the guest line that they provide does
post it in the chat room.
Yeah, and that guest line that does work for the show is 563-999-3021. 563-999-3021 is the guest line for the show. So we are continuing to struggle with BTR. I tried to call in on the host line tonight three times. It wouldn't let me do it. I was able on the direct connect to hear but not speak. So we are continuing to have all sorts of trouble with BTR.
Yeah, they're upgrading, you know, making things better, quote-unquote.
Oh, yeah. They claim that they're doing all sorts of things to make it better, and it's dysfunctional at this point. Now, that was Ms. Moore, Psalm 89:3. That's a bombshell. I have established the Bereth covenant with my chosen one. I have sworn an oath to Dode, the one who works on my behalf. Now, God, the creator of the universe, swearing an oath to a man is extraordinary. And since he said he did it, don't you think it's important that we understand what he promised Dode? And don't you think that if God took the time to tell us what he promised Dode, then we'd have to be stupid with a capital F to take those promises and annul them and give them to someone else?
Oh,
who do we think God is? A nincompoop? Just an absolute liar? He said, I made a sworn oath to Dode, not to Jesus, not to Christ, not to Allah, not to Muhammad, not to George Washington. I have sworn an oath to Dode, my coworker, forever and ever as an eternal witness, ad olam. I will establish your offspring, speaking to Dode, and that which you sow, Zerah. In addition, I will be built up by conceiving children and constructing a home, Bana, for your throne and seat of honor on behalf of all generations throughout time. Zillah, pause now and contemplate the implications. This promise that he made to Dode was that forever and ever, as an eternal witness, that he's going to establish Dode's offspring and that which he sows. You know, the verb is Zerah. And Paul had a field day with Zerah, saying it's singular, therefore the seed is just Jesus. He does the same thing with Abraham. And he says, you know, seed is singular, and singular means only one, and therefore you go from Abraham to Jesus. And then when he's talking about Dode, you go from Dode to Jesus. The seed is one. Yeah. So I'm here to tell you that if you were to go off and seed verb again, your lawn, you aren't going to set one seed in the dirt.
No.
If you buy a bag of seed, you better expect there's going to be a whole lot more than one seed in the bag. Seed is a concept in every language where it has a plural connotation. Moreover, every time Yahweh speaks of the seed of Dode, he's speaking of two different things, and they're indistinguishable in Hebrew. So you have to be presumptive to pick one or the other. He's either talking about sowing seed, which is one of his, you know, favorite metaphors. He loves horticultural metaphors. You know, the the olives, the vineyard with grapes that become wine, the olive that becomes olive oil, the grain that is sown to become a bread, and how the husk and the kernel all have their own merit. And so God loves these kinds of metaphors, and so sowing seeds would be that which you plant, that which you cultivate, that which has a yield that can be harvested. Sowing the seeds of truth and offspring. And so Zerah can be your offspring, your children, your descendants, your posterity, your family, as well as the product of what you have planted. But if in fact, which is not true, that by saying the seed of goat, that he was just referring to one person, Jesus, then you've relegated goat and all of the promises made to him to nothing more than a sperm donor. And by the way, if a sperm donor, then think it through, Christians, then he could not have been born of a virgin, could he? Now, the fact is, he wasn't born of a virgin. The prophecy specifically says he could be born of a woman the natural way. But the only way for the prophecy for him to be a distant descendant of Doe to be accurate is for him to have been born the normal way and not born of a virgin.
Right.
So if Paul was right, you're wrong. Think it through. Forever and ever as an eternal witness, I will establish your offspring and that which you sow. In addition, I will be built up by conceiving children and constructing a home for your seat of honor on behalf of all generations throughout time. Doe's position of honor, his throne, his seat of honor, his authority and authorization are essential to the very nature of God's family. It's central to who God is and to why the universe exists. If you've got a problem being second fiddle, then you aren't going to like heaven. Because the first chair has already been picked, already been afforded, and in Jesus. And it isn't any one of us. It's dope. If you've got a problem with God playing a favorite, then you're not going to like heaven because he plays favorites. His favorite is dope. Not Moshe. Not Yosha. It's not Yashaya. It's not Yirmiyah. It's not Yahuchanan. It's not Mataniah. It's not Jacob. Not Abraham. God's favorite chosen is Dove. He is establishing Dove not only as an eternal witness, but based upon his promise to Dove, he's going to establish his offspring and that which he sows, being built up himself by conceiving children and constructing a home, Vanna, for Dove's throne and seat of honor. For all generations throughout time. So long. Pause now and contemplate the implication. It is for darn sure that Yosha can't be the King of Kings and be the bright star of heaven since Yahweh has given all of that to God. And you need to understand why. We're not knocking Yosha, Jesus. We're not diminishing him. We're not slighting him. The universe wasn't created for him. God could have had him at any old time he wanted. He's just simply part of Yahweh set apart from him. A grossly diminished manifestation of God. God's whole with him or without him. But God's only infinite. He has joy in his life. He has purpose. He grows through family, through sons and daughters, and the firstborn of these, the Bakutim, the Zod. Pause now and contemplate the implications. Now, doing this very thing caused me to have an amazing yesterday. So amazing that I forgot it was Friday and thought today was going to be Friday. I was so excited by what I had come to learn. This, the 89th Mizmor, takes an abrupt change at the 38th statement. I mean, it goes from full bore, merciful, merciful, first, merciful, dode, 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 dode is everything, to the full side. But dode is literally the brilliance of the sun before Yahweh. And then it goes to God just absolutely ripping humankind to shreds. Angry. And the first statement in it had, you're anointed. And you're was singular. And so, I said, what in the world is God so angry with his anointed, with Dode? And I last night, or two nights ago, let's say Thursday night, I couldn't sleep. I didn't know what to do. How was I going to deal with God saying all these spectacular things about his anointed, his Messiah, Dode, and then having like the last 10 statements ripping into shreds? He's angry over your anointed. Well, I misread it. I mean, that's what it says, but I still misread it. But what if, by being mistaken, by the time I got to the 38th statement, day before yesterday, I said, you know, tomorrow morning I got to figure this out. I'm not going to skip over it. I'm going to figure it out. And as I sought to figure it out, it became obvious to me that what we were reading had a parallel. Most everything that Yahweh says has a parallel. There's something that it gives you the same insight, but from a slightly different perspective. So I came to realize that the parallel to what we had just read and what we continue to read was the passage that brought me here on this journey in the first place, 2 Samuel 7. 2 Samuel 7 is where I confronted Asher and realized that every English Bible translation was wrong. And it's what began this whole journey 18 years ago.
Comes around, comes around.
So I'm going to share with you that I went back to this place in the translation. This is page 3 of what now is 28 pages in this chapter. Went right back here. And I said, okay, I'm going to pause now and I'm going to contemplate the implications. I'm going to see if I can figure this out. Why is there this transition? So I went right back to the prophecy upon which my curiosity with and later devotion to Yah's testimony began. So once again, I want us to take a look at the 2 Samuel 7. And I want us to take a look at it from the perspective of what we have learned about Dode and what we're about to learn about the son of evil. I mean, this was the place where where even when I figured out what was wrong in the English translations with Asher and changed it from when he sins or if he sins to when sin is associated with him, there were still enormous problems with the identity of the individual being spoken about. Because it starts with Dode, it seems to transition to Solomon, and then Christians will say it's all about Jesus, but it clearly goes right back to Dode. And so, where in it do you say, well, now it's here and now it's there? And so, with fresh eyes, I said, you know, I'm going to see if I can resolve the conflicts. I think that's where the answer lies. Let me read to you the translation that of 2 Samuel 7. And it came to pass when the king, this would be Doug, sat down and relaxed in his home because Yahweh had given him a universal and comforting respite from his adversaries. That the king said to Nathan, Nathan means bestowed as a gift, the prophet. Please look around. I live in a house of cedar. But the ark of God sits within curtains. Now remember, we're going to go through this, and it's essential that we keep in mind how this conversation began. Yahweh says, Jod was living the life that he himself had given him a universal and comforting respite from all of his adversaries. And when he was there, and he's living tall, man, he's got a home right next to the threshing floor that he built, or he bought for Yahweh's house. He's collected all the materials to build the house of Yahweh. He's just down the ridgeline, some 777 steps. And he is now saying, well, you know, this is great, but shouldn't I feel uncomfortable? I'm in this beautiful house of cedar, and the ark of God is in that tent down there. What's wrong with this picture? That's what he's saying. And I want to tell you that if you look at it correctly, what he is saying is very similar to the Christian myth. That God should be served, that God should be worshipped, that God should have these mighty cathedrals. When God is saying, what in the hell is wrong with you? Don't you get it? I'm your dad. It's my job to create your home. It's my job to take care of you. It's not your job to build me a damn house. It's not your job to take care of me. That's stupid. I'm the dad in this relationship. It's my job to make sure that you're living the life. I'm the happiest. I'm the most fulfilled. I'm meeting my very purpose when you're enjoying yourself in your home. It is the opposite of what Christians think is appropriate. Dode had a moment where he's saying, hey, Nathan, what's wrong with this picture? I'm in this beautiful home, and God himself doesn't have a house. One of the things that makes Dode so incredible, I shouldn't use that word because incredible means not credible, so credible, so important to us, is Dode's real. He says stuff that isn't smart, even though he's probably the most brilliant man who ever lived. Because he says things that are really important for us to digest. This begins by saying, I got this great house. I'm living the life. And the ark of God is down there in a tent someplace. Exactly as God would have it. It's exactly why Dode is God's beloved son, not Yosha. God didn't create the universe for many me. He didn't create the covenant for many me. He created the covenant for the likes of Dod. It was exactly as Yahweh wanted. So let's read through this now, but with a full appreciation of that perspective. So Nathan said to the king, choose to travel about and engage in all that is in your best judgment for Yahweh. Then let's do whatever you think you got to do. Oh, you're a smart dude. Go about, engage, do whatever you think is in your best judgment for Yahweh. Wrong answer. Then that evening, it came to be that the word of Yahweh came to Nathan and said, go tell Dode, my co-worker. Do you guys have any idea why why Yahweh just didn't tell Doeg. I mean, he had inspired Doeg to write all these spectacular Mizmor Psalms. He had inspired Doeg to create the Mishal Proverbs. Why didn't Yahweh just say, hey, Nathan, kind of butt out here, pal. Doeg, my kid, I'm going to talk directly to him. Why was he talking through Nathan?
For us, probably.
It's because Doeg did a really bad thing.
Oh, well, that's the transition period, isn't it, when he's come out.
Yeah, he sent Uriah off to fight a battle that was winless and get killed so he could take his wife.
And go talk to him directly, yeah.
Yeah, and God was not the least bit pleased with that. And they had a timeout. It didn't change God's love for him. But to be a good father, you have to let your children know that there's consequence for bad decisions. You've got to let your kids make bad decisions, but you got to let them know there's a consequence. There was a consequence for that one. It was a really bad decision. There was a consequence. And I want to tell you, Toad paid dearly. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But that's why Nathan was talking to me. So Nathan said to the king, choose to travel about. Now that evening, the word of Yahweh came to Nathan conveying, go and tell Doeg, the one who works on my behalf, my co-worker, that this is what Yahweh says. Why should you build me a home to live in? Ooh, wow. Zing. Why should you build me a home to live in? Haven't you figured this out yet? I'm God. Do you think I need a home to live in? Why should you, you're my son, build me a home to live in? I mean, think about it, he says. Indeed, I have not lived in any house since the time that I lifted the children of Yisrael out of the crucibles of oppression in the tree, even to this day. I have existed walking about in a tent dwelling, everywhere which to show the way to the relationship that I have journeyed with the children of Yisrael. Did I say a single word to any of the tribes of Yisrael, my people, Yisrael, whom I fed, asking them, why not build me a house of cedar?
Even if I wanted one, I could get one, right?
Did you ever hear me say,
I would have asked for one by
now. Why not build me a house of cedar? No. Did you hear me once complain, hey, I'm hanging around here in a tent. Don't you think we could do better?
He gave very exacting instructions on how to build the tabernacle. You think if he wanted it to be made of, you know, cedar or wood or anything fancy, he would have given those instructions.
Do you know why he had it made like a tent? Because his whole goal is to camp out with his children in the promised land. That's what he wanted to do. That's the whole idea. It's about camping out with God. That's why he was in a tent. He was happy in the tent. And by the way, you know, an insignificant part of God was in that tent. God's home in heaven. So, why did I ever once ask, why not build me a house of cedar? So now, therefore, let's be real here. Say to my associate, Doeg, this is what Yahweh of the spiritual implement says. I took you from the sheepfolds, from chasing after sheep, to being the leader of my people over Israel. And I have been there with you wherever you have traveled. I have cut off all of your enemies, removing them from your sight, and I have made your name great, comparable to the names of the greatest on earth. Furthermore, I will appoint a place for my people. I'm their father. I will appoint a place for my people, Yisrael. And I will plant them there such that they may dwell in this place of their own and never have to move again. Neither shall the son of evil afflict them anymore, as will have been the case. Oh,
that's future tense.
I will appoint a place for my people. I'm responsible for them. I'm the dad. My people are Israel, and I'm going to plant them now so that they will dwell in this place of their own and never move again. Has that occurred?
No.
Future.
No.
Is it going to occur?
Yes.
Yes.
So if you are a Israelite, if you're a Jew, you damn well better listen, and you better go back to Israel. And if you don't go back, it's going to get really bad. You've got until probably late in 2028 at the absolute last moment. Otherwise, you're going to be uprooted. If you want to be planted by God such that you'll be able to stay in a place forever with Him, you need to go back. I'm going to plant them there so they will dwell in this place of their own, which means they're not going to share it with secular humanists, with Christians, or the dreaded goddamn Muslims. And they will never move again. Neither shall the son of evil. What a title. Now, most English translations.
That's the title I want.
Yeah. Most English translations have it, the evil one or children of wickedness. No, they always use wicked. They don't use evil. It's always wicked. But the Hebrew word is evil. And, of course, the Masoretes didn't like the sounds that were in the vowels in Yahweh's name, so they changed the waf, which is a O sound, to a V, and it became evil. Is there an English word that you've ever heard of that seems to carry the same sound and connotation as evil? How about evil?
Yeah.
Yeah, the English word evil is a transliteration of the Masoretic corruption of this word. So, yes, I could have translated this that he was the son. It's been singular, not
Bene.
Not Bene, sons, plural, or children. The son of evil. Now, that's interesting here because the son of evil is mentioned directly in the 89th Mizmor. They're parallel accounts. You know who the son of evil is? He works with the adversary. He is Paul.
I guess Paul.
That's correct. He is Paul. The son of evil. He's the son of Satan. The representative of Satan. And there is no group of people in the history of humankind that have tormented Jews longer or worse than the Roman Catholic Church. They're the worst. They're the origin of these conspiracies of blame the Jew, Roman Catholicism. The Jews have been worse to God's people than anyone else, and God's not amused. He's going to hold them accountable. Christians, you are in deep shit. You're a Roman Catholic. You're going to hell. So, it goes on to say, and since this time, I have instructed the judges in conjunction with my people, Israel, and I have created for you a respite from all of your enemies. Additionally, Yahweh boldly and publicly announced to you that He will act, engaging with you to create a family and home. So when your days are fulfilled and you lay around with your fathers, I will establish your seed after you, such that that which comes forth from inside of your very testicles, from your very core. Now, that ain't saying that it could be anyone other than Solomon. Now, the next person, the next reference, has to be Solomon, because there is only one son, there's only one descendant of Dode that Yahweh did this for. There was a direct result of that which came out of Dode's testicles. And that's what the statement is. You know, it's like there's a lot of statements where it talks about circumcision, and it says circumcision of the foreskin, and it talks about, very, very graphically what we're talking about doing here. Well, this is one that is really graphic, because God doesn't want you to use symbolic language. There's no symbolism here. This is from inside of your testicles, from your very core. And so I will erect his kingdom, and he shall build a home for my name, and I will set up the place of honor for his kingdom forever. And I will be his father, and he shall be my son. Wait a minute here. How did God go from all of this stuff about Dode to making this promises about Solomon? If he's going to be my son, I'm going to be his father, I'm going to set up the kingdom forever. No. Yahweh has continually said, Dode, it's your kingdom that I'm going to establish forever. Dode, you are the son, my son, I am your father. So what I think is happening here is that it's the Dode and Solomon, it's the father and the son that God is speaking of. It's the father and the son whose kingdom will be erected by God, past, present, and future. It is the father and the son, Dode and Solomon, that will build a home for his name. And I will set a place of honor for his kingdom forever. And I will be his father, and he shall be my son. By saying it this way, that it's going to be the seed that comes forth from inside of your testicle, what God is saying is, I'm your father. I'm going to accomplish this by the me in you. The God in you, though, which Yahweh anointed Dode with his spirit three different times. The God in you is going to do these things, just as the Dode and your son is now getting credited with these things. It's a perspective. So I will erect his kingdom. That's Dode's kingdom. He shall build a home for my name. Dode. Dode built the home for Yahweh's name with his words. And I will set up his place of honor and his kingdom forever. Promise he makes to Dode all of the time. And I will be his father, he shall be my son. Another promise he makes to Dode. When that which is perverted, twisted, and crooked is associated with him, I will correctly reciprocate on his behalf with the branch, staff, scepter, and rod of mortal men, and with the infliction of the children of Adam. But my love and mercy shall never depart from him, as I took it from Shaul, whom I cast away before your very presence. I'm going to return to that in a moment, because it changes everything. Everything that I thought was true in this prophecy, I was wrong. The truth is far more profound. And your house, your family, and your kingdom are trustworthy and reliable, accurate and correct, true, forever in your presence. Your throne and your place of honor shall be established forever. Consistent with all of these words, everything within this revelation, Nathan correctly conveyed them to Dode. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to share next. I wrote yesterday. I wrote it yesterday, not long before I was supposed to be on this show, and I was just totally blown away by it. The transition from you to he, in the midst of what has been subsequently categorized as 2 Samuel 7:11, seems to rightly infer that you has been Dode and that he has become Solomon. Christians, however, have inserted their Jesus in this place, even though Yosha did not come from a seed sperm that emanated inside of Dode's manhood, nullifying the prophecy. And had it been the distant legacy of Dode's semen, then Yosha could not have been born of a virgin. Now, we know that Yosha was not born of a virgin. The prophecy is that a young woman's going to give birth to a son in the normal way. And the very fact that he's going to be a descendant of Dode means that God could not have been provided that sperm. But Christians, your whole thing is based upon him being virgin born. And if it's the seed of Dode, as you claim, is Paul just going to diminish him to nothing but a sperm donor, then your whole mythos on your virgin birth and your Christmas is rubbish. You can't have it. He either isn't the seed of Dode and virgin born, or the prophecy is for shit. And this whole
that
his only contribution was being a sperm donor is utterly not. It kills you. You know, sometimes when you're presented with something that destroys the very mythos of your belief system, you just need to admit it and be grateful that someone pointed out the flaws so you can move on with your life. And maybe you'll be lucky enough to find the truth. Further, Yahweh was responsible for Solomon's kingdom and did not do likewise for Yosha. He did not create a kingdom for Yosha. Yosha didn't have a kingdom. No. It was Solomon who built the house for Yahweh's name. And that God, this is that house that God has been specifically addressing all along. Curiously, however, added around this point, the identity of he of whom Yahweh has been addressing in his prophetic revelation to Nathan shifts, seemingly returning to Dode's. Now, this conclusion isn't conjecture, but factually derived. Said, Dode undeniably represents the him from whom Shaul was removed in 2 Samuel 7:15. And in the 16th statement, we're back to you being Dode. The fact is, Dode clearly recognized that this was all about him, as it is evidenced throughout his subsequent discussion directly with Yah, as is recorded in 2 Samuel 7:18 through 29. It all serves as a celebration of Dode's place of honor and relationship with God. Now, having returned to this very place where my journey began some 18 years ago, through Ashbel associated with in 2 Samuel 7:14, we're left to ponder the implications, now more aware of where we have been and where we are going. So I'd like to suggest that Solomon was simply an extension of Dode, as the text affirms, and thus a blend of his best and worst traits, of Dode's worst and best traits. It was the Dode in him that caused Yah to build his kingdom. Likewise, it was the Father and the Son who built the home for Yahweh's name. It's a metaphor for Yahweh doing this as our Father through his Son, Dode. and thus it remains Dode, whose place of honor and kingdom will endure forever, as is affirmed elsewhere throughout the prophets, including in this prophecy. Therefore, it is Dode that Yahweh has stated, he is my son and I am his father. Something the 89th Mizmor reiterates. And that is why I return to this place, to the passage which was incorrectly translated in every English Bible, without exception. Every variation claimed that if or when he sinned, that God would see to it that he was punished by the rod of men. At the time, I came to realize that Asher was either wrongly translated or that this statement could not apply to Yosha as Christians had projected. After all, if or when Yosha sinned, he would have been chastised for his own failings, not ours, negating his ability to serve as the perfect and unblemished Passover lamb. At the time, I honestly thought that I'd resolved the issue by more correctly rendering Asher is associated with, based upon its relational qualities. But lots of other conflicts remained. For example, Yahweh has not, and according to him, will not establish a kingdom for Yosha, as this prophecy says. Yosha walked into the house Herod the Edomite had constructed for his name, or the Edomite's name, one that would soon be torn down by his sponsor, Rome. So that's the opposite of building the house, isn't it? Moreover, Yosha was the first and foremost, was first and foremost, the Pesach El. He was only mockingly called the King of Israel by Rome, never by God.
Moreover, by himself.
Never by himself. There's a reason that Yosha consistently referred to himself as the Son of Man rather than the Son of God. He was born of men, coming through the line of Dode. It was the Spirit who established the father-son relationship with Yosha, just as it had previously done with Dode. When religious perversion and political corruptions were associated with Yosha, his physical body died as a result of them while he was serving as the Passover lamb. And his soul, or more correctly, the nefesh of Yahweh, burdened with these human offenses, endured Matzah and Sheol so we wouldn't have to endure the same fate. But in Sheol, Yahweh's nefesh was harassed, as Dode revealed in Mizmor 22 and 88, by demonic beings, not by the rods of mortal men, nor by the infliction of the sons of Adam. But this did happen to Dode. Dode made some poor choices, not the least of which was sending Uriah off to a near certain death so that he could take his wife. And he suffered for it with the rod and the scepter of mortal men and of the inflictions of the sons of Adam. His firstborn son died on the seventh day. His eldest surviving son raped his daughter. His third son murdered the firstborn to avenge the rape of his sister. Then that same son, Absalom, led a coup d'etat that wrenched the kingdom away from his father. When he was killed during the counterattack, Dode wept for all that had transpired. Even worse, when Dode chose to have his people suffer rather than personally endure a few years on the run, thousands died. And from a broader perspective, all of these things, and far worse, happened to Yisrael as a result of the people's contribution to perverting and corrupting the Word of God. More than any nation or ethnicity, God's people have suffered from the rods and scepters of mortal men and from the infliction of the sons of Adam. In other words, God is fair. Acting justly, even in the case of his beloved son and his chosen people. There would be consequences for bad decisions, just as there would be an enduring reward for being right. And it's from this perspective that we should view the prophecy recorded in 2 Samuel 7, as well as the abrupt transition from benefit to consequence between the 37th and 38th statements, the 89th Mizmor. It is also the proper perspective to consider the fact that Dod, the living embodiment of the covenant, is the exemplar for all that is good and bad with Yisrael. This may even be the best perspective in which to view our relationship with Yahweh in the here and now and forever. And that's Asher's take on it. And I agree.
I think Asher's agreeing with us.
Along these lines, I want to share something equally germane to our understanding of 2 Samuel 7, as it is to understanding Dod. He exemplifies and represents more than one individual man. More perhaps than even Jacob, Dod is Yisrael. The promises made to him were made to them, from being the children of God and heirs to the covenant to being recipients of the land. His joys and heartache, his ongoing battles with Goyim, his insights and confusion, the benefits he enjoyed in conflict with the covenant, and the consequences he endured when he ran afoul of it, are all shared with the nation he shepherded. Second Samuel 7. That prophecy is all about Dod. And the few places where it is more than that, it becomes the Father and the Son. And it becomes the Son as the children of Yisrael. But it never leads to Dod. It was all about Dod's foolish question. Don't I need to build a house of cedar for Yahweh? To which Yahweh responded to all of this. No, I'm the Father. I'm going to take care of my son forever. It's my job to do all of these things, and I've made all of these promises to you. And yes, as your father, when you screw up, I'm going to hold you accountable. That doesn't change the fact that my love for you is enduring, and it's going to exist forever. The entirety of it, from beginning to end, is a celebration of Yahweh's life with Dod as his beloved son. Now, when I recognized that, I went back to translate Mizmor 89, starting at the 38th voice, where I thought, now I'm going to say that what Yahweh is doing is he's using Dod as a stand-in for Yisrael. But I got there and I said, oh, that's not what the words actually say. You translate the first three verbs, and it's obvious that you're anointed. He's speaking to Yisrael. He's telling Yisrael, you, singular, Yisrael, have done everything you could possibly do to discount and disavow your Messiah. Your Messiah is Dod, and everything that follows is Yahweh railing against Yisrael for having discounted, disavowed, and broken the trust with Dod. Turns out I didn't need this return to where it all began to figure it out. But by going back there, I think we uncovered one of the most profound truths that we have considered thus far. and it is actually essential to understanding the 89 Mizmor, because the way Dode is presented in it, he's the most important man in the history of humankind. And so the chapter is to Dode or not to Dode. Fellas, we've done a little more than an hour and a half. I'm all worked up, as you can tell.
Yes.
I am really hoping that this recorded. I think you all know that whatever we do on this program is all extemporaneous. We begin with what Yahweh wrote, and then from there it is extemporaneous. And I would not want to attempt to replicate the passion that came through with this revelation being so fresh. So I really hope that we are recording, and that I hope what I think is one of the most profound insights that we have derived thus far from studying Yahweh's words. Yeah, was recorded. And what I would like to do, if it's all right with you guys, is to continue this right through the translations of the 89th Mizmor, because it's just begun to get good. I think it's the ultimate watershed moment.
My only concern is, usually, even if it's recording, you get about a half hour after the show's over before it cuts the recording off, period.
Yes.
So just to give you that heads up.
So can you let me know if, because we're set for an hour and a half, starting at 7, that would be to 8:30. So we should be good.
9 o'clock will be about the time that it will cut us off regardless.
Yes. And anyway, I want to say good night. I'm almost speechless because of how strongly this has affected me. It is the culmination of this journey that we have been on. That's why when I woke up and I started writing this, I said, this is an entirely new book. This is not the third volume of Observations for Our Time. This is coming home in our time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming home to
us. It comes out to it. You know what I was thinking as I read this thing? And what we've been doing, what you've been doing in particular with Dode, and how we've been analyzing everything about Dode. I think the future will be, as far as the growth of the family, because I don't think Christians can take this. I really don't. I think they will hate the messenger more than, I mean, some will accept the terms of the covenant, but most of them are going to hate this message regardless. But I believe that the growth through of Yehudim and Yisrael will work exponentially at this point from now to 2028.
Yeah, I think so. And by the way, once you get to the end of it, you start getting into 89, starting about the 38th statement.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbinic religious Jews are going to hate it more than Christians.
Oh, yeah. But,
and it is full-scale war on Rabbinic Judaism.
Yeah.
And I make a statement there. In fact, I make a couple of statements. First, when the positive ends, I'm actually crude. Yahweh was
pretty crude. But he wants to make a point. Get down to the level.
Yahweh will be crude to make a point. And sometimes you just got to be that blunt to get people's attention. And I had a concluding comment after 37 that plays right off the words. I mean, Yahweh laid out the words, and I once he set up the pens, man, I had a field day with him. But what I had to say about the minions of Jews going to the Western Wall, which is the Herod's Wall.
Oh, the head bobbing.
The Edomite. And the head bobbing up and down and reciting Dode's Mizmor. Not even contemplating what they meant. My hope was that not a single one of them would wake up to this. And that might sound horrible, but I really, really dislike religious Jews. Just like I dislike all religious people, but I particularly have a disdain for religious Jews. Nothing I love more than secular Jews and want them. In fact, I think the majority of those who have become part of the covenant family are Jews. I mean, I fell in love with a Jew. They're my favorite people. But religious Jews were put in a position where they were given superior intellect, and they were the conveyors of Yahweh's testimony, and they of all people to corrupt it, it is sick. Mm-hmm. I don't want them in heaven. I don't want to spend eternity with them. I don't think God does either.
I don't think you will.
No. So I'm not writing this for religious Jews.
No.
I'm writing this for the 80% of Yisrael and Yahudah that are reasonable and rational and intelligent and open-minded. I'm not dumbing this down. I'm not softening it because Jews are brilliant. They have 15 IQ points higher than the average human. Smartest people in the world, ethnically. They're capable of understanding this. Almost all Jews speak English. It's the language spoken by more Jews than any other language in the world. And Jews, secular Jews, are open-minded and they're rational. All of this has been written for secular Jews. And as Yahweh says when he speaks of the Nakri, that many, many Goyim are going to benefit along with Israel. I'm delighted that other Goyim have benefited. And the more the merrier. But the fact is, Yahweh's primary mission is to call his children out of the three Babylons. Political Babylon, religious Babylon, and geographic Babylon. That is his mission. And Yahweh never does anything without working through people. Even when he returns, he's returning with his premier fighter because he's mad as hell. He's returning with Dove. In this particular case, there wasn't a single Yahudim or Israelite that was willing to do what God wanted done, and God never, ever, ever works alone. He works through his creation. That's the prime objective. And so, fellas, we got this mission by default.
We were willing to do it.
But we got it by default only because Israel wasn't willing to engage. And as we continue to do this job enthusiastically, we expect to be replaced by thousands upon thousands of Jews. They come back to their rightful place. And, fellas, we're going to fade into the family. Just become just normal, average members of the
family.
Our job will be a done. Yeah. I think we're all going to be very happy to just become part of the family.
Yeah.
So we're a transition team. We are the replacement players. No replacement theology. We're the
strike season players.
That's right. We're
the scabs crossing the strike line.
We are. Scabs for y'all.
That's good.
Yeah. Scabs for y'all. Replacement players. Exposing replacement theology.
Very good.
All right, fellas. Well, I'm glad we're all having a chuckle. Let's hope that this recorded, and may Yah bless you all. I'll do my best to
watch. Watch. Get the right answer.
But if not, we had a tremendous audience today, and I'm hoping to be in the archives.
Yeah.
Good night. Blessing.
Hello.
Shalom, y'all.
Shalom.
Bye.